Welcome to the Girls Only Project podcast, where we will be discussing all things women in sport. We want to use this platform to discuss and share the challenges we face as women in sport.
So I'm really stoked to have Hayley Nixon on the podcast today. Hales and me go back quite a far way, so I'm really excited to speak to her today about her sporting journey. But Hayley's also one of our Girls Only Project ambassadors, and she's also had some amazing sporting achievements, world champion in ocean kayak racing, and world champion in surf ski as well. So Hales, it's awesome to have you here on the podcast with me. I'm really excited to chat to you.
Thanks so much for having me. I think it is pretty ironic. Hey, like we met up quite randomly as rowers, had a couple of years rowing together, and now, like, I don't know, 10 years on, we're chatting on a podcast. So it's good that we're still in the sports circle, and good that we're still representing women. Hey.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So I know that you know, with your focus is mainly on gender equality in sport, but I think before we get to that, I also just want to, you know, throw back the past a bit and go back to our rowing days, if that's okay, if you're happy to chat about that.
Yes, of course.
So me and you rowed together. Basically, you were my first rowing partner for, like, international competition, and me and Hales rowed for, I don't know how many years, like, maybe only 2 years, I think, was in the end.
But, I think two, yeah.
But yeah, it was, we had some ups and downs and some pretty tough times and learned a lot, I think, from each other.
Exactly.
I was a little young buck coming in, and Hales was a little bit older and more experienced than me, but she definitely, you definitely taught me a hell of a lot.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a really cool time. But I mean, yeah, what did you, I think maybe chat about that time that we were rowing together, and maybe we can, like, remember some of the stuff that we went through together.
No, for sure. I think one of the first things comes to mind is that, like, we were definitely, like, quite an optimistic, almost dream team. Like, you were coming back from the States, and I had actually just sort of settled in Australia. I'd been there about a year. You know, the national coach then, I'm sure Roger still is the national coach. He kind of called me up, and he was like, there's this youngster coming back from America. She's unbelievable. Like, let's get you guys in the pair. Let's see what happens. And I think that's what was, like, so cool. I think we, you know, in some ways we threw ourselves into the deep end with, like, a lot of expectation, and maybe we were both a little bit, like, I remember, and I'm sure you'll remember, the one World Cup, I think it was in Munich, we went to. And because we'd been doing so well in South Africa, we went over there, and I think we like barely scratched through the C final.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just remember being so gutted because my expectation was so much higher than where we were. And I remember Roger saying to me, like, you've got to calm down, like, you've got to walk before you run. You girls are brand new at this. And I've never forgotten that whole idea that, like, yeah, just that, you know, you've got to go through the whole process. And I think we then did, like, exponentially improve. But I always felt like we were training maybe super, super hard. And there was a lot going on with, like you say, like, exponential learning, getting to know each other, suddenly being in a pair 24/7, training our butts off. I mean, do you remember there's a video of us racing down in Athens on a course, like, just at a time trial, and I've got so much strapping on, you can't even see my skin color, like, trying to hold my elbow together. I think your back was broken already, and I just look back on some of that, and I think, flip, we were stubborn. Like, we were just, the Olympic dream was so powerful. And I mean, maybe that was the beginning of the end, certainly for me having to have surgery, but I'm still grateful for that time, because people often say to me now, like, how come you've, like, only just started paddling, and you know, you've done really well? And I'm like, no, don't worry.
I've done some hard yards already. Don't you worry about
exactly.
That.
This is nothing compared to a 2K rowing course.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so I've got fond memories of that. I mean, it was hectic. There were ups and downs, but, like, I just think that's where we were. Like, that was the phase we were in, and you certainly went on to probably benefit from that. And then maybe I changed course, but yeah, I guess things work out for the right reasons in the end.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think we both ended up having a good career, just in different maybe sports at the end of the day. But yeah, I certainly remember our time in Athens together on that training camp with Gianni just screaming at us.
Goodness.
I hope Pete Lambert listens to this, but I think we did one session with him when it was like 10 1Ks or something, and we were just cruising up and down. Dying. I don't know if you remember that session, which is like, I think there were some tears. I think it was the end of
for sure.
And we had to still go on to race at Lucerne, and by that time, I think I had like a rib stress fracture, and it was just, like we were just trying to fast track as much as we could to get to the standard we wanted to get to. But yeah, I guess I think the system's changed a lot since then, and they're obviously probably a bit more careful about fast tracking athletes now. But we definitely learned from it.
And I mean, I think you have to try, and I think the system evolved, and you know, maybe we were a little bit guinea pig, but it, you know, like you and Nadine, and then you and Katie, like you obviously proved that things do work. I mean, look at the South African rowing system now. Like it's had some pretty unbelievable results. So that's just how it goes. But that I don't know if they still do that, but that was a hectic tour, like race, World Cup, 2 weeks of hell training in Athens, and then race another World Cup. It was gnarly, but we made it through.
Yeah, exactly. Away for a month, it was like, it was crazy, crazy, crazy times.
And actually, now that you say that, like, I think that has mentally and subconsciously prepared me for how well I handle traveling now. Like, I'm often away for 6 weeks on the go. And I think, you know, like, we learned a lot. Like, you're sharing a room with someone, you're in each other's face all day, every day. If you have a good session or a bad session, you still got to go back and sit next to each other in single beds, you know? So I definitely carried a lot of that through into like the racing I've done over the past 3 or 4 years at least.
Yeah, definitely. You can't go back to that room and sit in silence. Eventually someone's going to crack and you're going to be like,
I know.
Time to talk. Or you would just talk this out.
What was that series you always watched? My family, but all those students. Not Friends, the other super funny one. Sorry.
Think of it now.
How I Met Your Mother.
How I Met Your Mother. Yeah.
I think that saved a lot of training camps for us. Anyway.
got my head stuck in there. Obviously in the end, like in the end of a whole journey, we didn't, you know, end up going to London together. And I think that was, you know, like when I think back to it now, it was obviously heartbreaking, I think, and tough, as you know. I mean, yes, I went to the end, but I did have to change partners. Obviously, you didn't come. Like, how do you? How did? I mean, I don't even know if you can remember, but I mean, do you remember how that felt and how you dealt with it?
No, for sure. I mean, it was. It's so weird. I mean, I think you and I might have met up a year or two ago and actually spoken about it for the first time. But it really did break me. And I think it was just so emotional. Like, we'd given up so much and we'd committed so much to going, and we'd been this little dream team. And I think when I came back from surgery and I started getting strong again, and I also just felt a little bit mismanaged as an athlete. Me personally, I felt like there were always goalposts put in place. And like the coaches kept saying, well, Haley, if you do this, you'll get back in the boat. And if you'll do this. And then I felt like even if I did them, it was never good enough. Like, they already knew that you two were a better combination than me maybe being in the boat. So it was quite hard to deal with, because I remember Roger saying to me once, you're so good as an individual athlete. That is what you should focus on. And I remember thinking, well, that doesn't count this year, so stop it. Like, I'm not an individual athlete. I'm going in the pair. And I think he was just like, no, you should go in 4 years' time to the next one. And I was like, no, I'm going in 4 months to this one. So, you know, dealing with that kind of stuff was really hard. And I promise you, the day that they told me I wasn't selected, I honestly thought we were going for a sponsors meeting. I thought that, like, you know, the sponsors, I thought that they were coming down to like wish us well. And I literally walked into this empty conference room with selector or sponsor and head coach and got told, thanks very much, you're not coming on to the Olympics. And I was like, wow, that was a curveball. I think I knew in my heart that I was the reserve already, but I sort of was in denial about it. I just kept thinking,
of course,
no, like, Yeah, because I always, like, when I look back on it now, I felt like you and I either went really well or we'd go really terribly.
Yeah, and we almost wouldn't be able to fix the boat.
Yeah. And I was like, but back us, because on the day we're going to go so well, we're going to get a medal, you know? And they were probably thinking, no, because if you don't go well on the day, you might not actually get through the course. And and that was pretty hard for me to stomach, because it's pretty black and white. It's like, Haley's not going. Haley's obviously the problem. But yeah, I mean, I could be here all day talking about the psychology behind that. Like, I was broken. I think I cried for 3 days. I don't even know if I got out of bed. But a lot of that is just your, like, my whole, I think my whole persona and personality and ego and everything was wrapped up in Haley and Leanne, or Haley becoming an Olympian, being, you know, rowing for South Africa.
Yeah, definitely.
So when someone tells you you're not, you're just like, well, that's so embarrassing. Well, what have I done for the last 4 years? Like, what am I going to do then? Like, it floored me. It's like your family turning their back on you and saying, well, sorry, you actually didn't, you know, meet it. So go home. Like, we're not interested. Find another family.
Yeah, your world falls apart.
So that was hard.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure even when you left, like, you would have the sense of, like, because I remember thinking, those are people I spend all day, every day with. And when I packed my room up and drove down to Durban, that was it.
Yeah.
I just lost 12 friends instantly.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot more behind it. And obviously, as athletes, like, the Olympics are such a – they're on such a pedestal that, you know, everyone, even like Hank McGregor, who I've become, you know, really relatively good friends with now, and he's the most accomplished paddler in the world, 13 times world champion. And you still mention the Olympics to him and you see him bite his jaw, because he knows – it's the one thing he didn't do, and it's the one thing that people regard as, like, the highest attribute as an athlete. And, you know, whether it is or isn't is irrelevant.
Yeah.
People do think like that. So, yeah. So, anyway, I mean, it was just it is what it is. And I guess in hindsight, it's cool to see what I've done since the Olympics, or since not going to the Olympics. But in the moment, it was soul destroying. It was pretty tough.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think, when I look at you now and, like, how you've turned it around almost and gone on to, you know, pursue something else and flip achieve at it, like, at the highest level, is phenomenal. I mean, I don't think every athlete can do that, can, like, be hit hard in that way and be, like, chasing a dream, and then it's, like, almost, you know, you don't achieve it, but then you, like, pick yourself up and you like almost be like, well, I'm going to throw that in your face and I'm going to do one better. And here I go. So, I mean, like, for me, it's really inspiring. Like, I still, like, look up to you as an amazing athlete. And
oh,
like,
that's good to hear.
That still motivates me to keep going all the time.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, I think it's really good therapy. Like, I think some people go to food, some people go to drawing, some people, you know, like, and I think in terms of, like, warding off, you know, depression and really feeling down and out all the time, it was quite lucky that I got introduced to another sport quite quickly.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's just time and place. Like, I came back to Durban and a lot of my good friends were good paddlers. And they immediately were like, you should come paddle. And it wasn't easy. Like, I was terrible. I couldn't sit in a boat. I used to fall out 100 times a session. Like, people just laughed at me. And talk about ego. I was like, I've just come out of, like, 3 months away from maybe going to Olympics, and now I actually can't even sit in a kayak. Like,
I look
like an
idiot.
But as you said, we'd done so much mileage. I think the engines were so powerful and so well conditioned from all that rowing that if I just stuck it out and kind of learned to paddle, I'd be able to sort of draw on all that rowing, like, rowing power and fitness. And yeah, and I guess small steps at a time. I mean, I didn't sort of get in a kayak and think, okay, this is cool, I'll pull this off. It happened over, like, a year or two. It's a long story, but I do think I was lucky that I came home and I had a bunch of paddlers to kind of do something with. And, that was awesome, because otherwise it's really easy to just go down a slippery slope, because you've put all your eggs in one basket, and now what do? You blew the basket up.
Yeah, it's so important to, like, find another goal almost pretty soon.
For
otherwise, sure. Otherwise the it can get you down and out.
Of course.
You don't find that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. So, maybe let's move away from that for a little bit and talk about, maybe some of the challenges that you've faced as a woman in sport. As a woman in sport.
There's quite a lot, and I'm sure we'll kind of organically evolve as we talk. But I think off the bat, it's this issue of always being inferior. I sort of feel like the continuous struggle has been, well, you're okay, but the men are better. Like, you might be, and by you, I mean generalized, like females, that female's winning, but like, check how the males are winning. Like, and it goes through, it's so set in our culture and in society that men are better because men are faster or stronger. I always just felt like it didn't matter whether you won, because unless you were beating the men, then you're always just the slower female. And you kind of think, well, physically, we're never ever really going to beat the men. Maybe on ultra endurance events, but that's about it. And I've also always felt like I just constantly have to prove myself. I feel like when a guy picks up a sponsor, he picks up the whole deal. But if a girl picks up a sponsor, it's always a different contract.
You can get half of what we give the men.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
And it's amazing how it is. It's amazing how sponsors will admit that. They'll be like, I just had a chat with a friend who sponsors crews. And he was saying to me, the first time he signed up a female, he signed her up at 50% for no other reason but that she was a female.
Yeah.
And then someone pointed it out to him, like, what are you doing? And I think that's sort of the feeling. And I don't know if guys are just better at standing up for themselves or just better at negotiating contracts, but I do feel like I've always just been a bit like, okay, thank you. Anything, I don't mind, whatever you can do.
Yeah, I'll take whatever you can give me.
Yeah. And I really think that as females, like, we're super grateful for everything we get, and we're really good on social media, and we're really good at putting our best foot forward and promoting things and being good sportsmen, and not that men aren't. But I just feel like we can provide such a whole package, and it comes so naturally to us. Anyway, I'd say probably the two biggest things has been trying to get around the naysayers that are always like, oh, well, it's great that you won, but you didn't actually win by enough.
Yeah.
And then this idea that, like, we're always so grateful for anything we get, but we actually often give a lot more than we get. And I don't think the men do that. I just think it comes easier to them because they're male. And it is changing, so don't get me wrong, it's definitely changing. But it's been quite a tough struggle, and I just think we're just going to have to deal with that. I often say, like, it's not unlike apartheid to racism. Sexism is a real thing. We just got to slowly sort of start to undo those barriers and convince people. Yeah,
definitely. And I think it's probably a little bit due to obviously the stereotypes that have been put on women throughout the years.
Yeah.
But like you say, men have always been offered the full package if we're talking about sponsorship. And then because we've always just accepted whatever we can get, then people are used to that. So in a way, like, we've also got to change how we approach sponsors or how we approach companies or whatever, and not sell ourselves short, I think, in a way as well. We also just need to stand up for ourselves and go, I can give you the full package. Like, I am the real deal.
No, so, exactly.
you go.
And you hit the nail on the head. Like, if we all accept, like, mediocrity, or if we all accept less, then we're never going to change it. And then we're actually doing each other wrong. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
If a sponsor approaches you and says, I'll give you 50 Rand, and I phone him up and go, I'll take 40, or whatever, like, we almost need to stand together and say, like, just one by one, like, empower yourselves.
Yeah.
It's never going to be nasty or manipulative or overly demanding, but just know your value.
Yeah.
I think that's the big thing, or respect your value. And for me, like, I was actually thinking the other day about how there's such a gap in the market for like managing athletes for these kinds of things, and especially females. But it's also just to try and be transparent up front. Like, it's an awkward conversation to have when it comes to whatever, let's say sponsorship. But if you can just nip it in the bud from the very start, then everyone's expectations are laid out black and white, and then no one is going to be disappointed or bitter or feel like they gave more than they got, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's certainly the approach I want to take moving forward, and what I would definitely mentor to other athletes.
Yeah, just put it on the table from the get-go.
No, exactly.
And then no questions asked.
And the other thing that's happened, like, a lot in sort of surf ski paddling, and it's even happening in the doozy this weekend, is that they're trying to match. Like, I always say to them, it's like the prognostics we used to do with rowing.
Yeah.
Remember, obviously you remember how, like, it didn't matter if you were the women's lightweight double or the men's heavyweight eight.
Yes.
The lightweight double could win if their prognostic was higher than the men's.
Yes.
And it meant that, like, it got rid of gender immediately, because, like, it was embarrassing for the guys if the girls actually went faster and vice versa, but it was based on the girls' specific time and the men's specific time.
Exactly.
So we're seeing a lot more of that come through in paddling. And what it does is it means all the naysayers and all the bloomin' weekend warriors and, you know, couch referees, like, are actually getting educated as to, yes, like, Haley's time was 1:04 and Hank's time was 56 minutes, but actually, based on stats, Haley was 98% of the best time, and, you know, Hank was 92%. Actually, Haley won that race.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Jeepers, our women's paddling is really strong.
Yeah.
You know, but they don't see that if they don't know. Yeah. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to educate more in that regard and give everyone, like, a bit of handicaps or a bit of incentives. But a very, very good friend of mine will actually argue against even that. And she says, like, she feels that it shouldn't be about how the women do against the men. It should just be, like, women on women, men on men, because ultimately you're judging. So how they do a lot in paddling is that if the woman, the winning male's time is 100%, that's it.
Yeah.
So his time is the bench, and then the women's time come off as percentages of that. So again, it's pretty gender biased, because you're just assuming that the male's time is best, and then the women have to be within that. So it can get tricky, but I do think there's a lot of progress, and I think it is at least quite a transparent way to allow genders to be compared against each other, but also to, like, reward women, actually, because they're always in the shadows, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that was actually one of the really cool things about the rowing system and the way they did the prognostics, was that we could, like, we could beat the men. We could beat them without actually beating them.
it was liberating.
It was very,
and obviously beautiful. It was hugely motivating for all of us, because, like, if you got, I don't know if it was 85% up or 92%, I can't remember the stats, but you knew you'd had a really solid race, regardless of the fact that the men's pair had beaten you by, you know, 3.5 minutes or whatever. So no, it was very cool. But so those have definitely been some of the struggles. It's just breaking the barrier of, like, you're a female, you deserve less, just be grateful for whatever you can get. You know, you'll never be as good as the men. Whereas now we've got, like, bonuses. So if the women get within a certain handicap of the men's race, they win the bonus. And suddenly women are beating men on paper, which has really lifted the women's reputation in the sport. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I guess it's also, it's not a big thing in South Africa, but I guess prize money is also something that's, quite widely spoken about. And I think in some of your competitions, you do win prize money. So I don't know how that compares to men's races, if you're getting equal pay or if that's still different.
No, so, like, I've had to, burn my bra a few times and try and, like champion the equal prize money thing, because I sort of got to the stage where, I was just like, are you telling me that I'm winning my race, he's winning his race, and I'm getting one third of what he's getting purely based on gender?
Yeah.
And we sort of always just said, like, imagine hiring a male and a female lawyer and just going, well, he's a guy, so he is definitely going to get three times what you get per month, and you must just deal with that because you're a female and there's less female lawyers in the world, so, you know, move on. Because that's what they kept telling me, like, yeah, but there's not as many females
there's
in the race.
Many,
and I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, but there might be 100 men in the race and only 20 women. But seriously, of those 100 men, only 5 of them have probably got a chance of being on the podium. So, and this is often the, and then you also just think, and I always think it goes back to South Africa going through their whole phase after the apartheid of bringing colour into sport. And you sort of think, if women weren't even paddling doozy 25 years ago or 30 years ago, how can you expect that the same amount of women would be paddling doozy today as there are men?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we come from a culture of women being active until they have babies and then focusing on their children or being housewives or whatever. So it's quite hard to punish the current athletes because their friends aren't actually...
For the past, yeah.
Yeah, for the past. And I think that's what frustrated me the most. So we're in a good place now with surf ski where pretty much every race is equal prize money, bar a few. And I think it has had a pretty good knock-on effect because it's made more women come because there is money, whereas before there wasn't.
Okay.
And it's obviously incentivizing them to race harder and to train better because now they actually want to win the money.
Yeah.
So it becomes a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. The race organizer sees more women enter his event. He realizes that maybe the money did help and. So that's definitely been pretty positive.
One of the key things women have battled with is the sort of chicken and egg of maybe not having the same sponsorship as men for various reasons, therefore not being able to go to as many races as the men do, which then means race organizers look down on the women for not participating as much as men do. And then the double whammy is like, even if they do go to the races, they weren't getting the same return on prize money. So at the end of the day, the women's expenses were so much higher than the men's. So at the end of your year, the guys are going, oh, this is awesome. I'm going to stay doing this sport because look how much profit I've made, you know, potentially. Whereas the women are going, oh my word, no, I came out in the red zone, so it's not worth me doing this anymore. And they stop. So that is changing. Definitely is changing. But it's certainly how a lot of the women I've spoken to have felt and did feel, and some still do. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's almost like, in some way, I mean, we obviously always want to try and find a way to help the situation and make it better. And I think it's just like the support maybe that women need. You know, we like as an individual person, you can't make up for the years of the lack of women being involved in sport. But
yeah, no, if you can't.
If we had, if maybe we were supported a little bit, maybe even more than men were, to try and get those numbers up, and then you know, and then it would be equal. Then we'd have equal participation, and then hopefully no complaints. But you know, sometimes it's almost like you have to go over and above to make up for a loss somewhere, because it is difficult.
That's
like
for
if
sure.
you're getting less prize money, the events are still costing you as much. You know, then it's actually almost like women are still going, well, I still don't want to go because it's not worth my while. So it's frustrating.
We had a situation last year where a really top event decided that they were going to give equal prize money, and they were going to give like sort of, I think, places 1 to 8 in both the men and the women. But if there were less than 10 men or 10 women on the start line, they would only award top 3 with prize money. So immediately as the woman, you're like, that is never going to happen for the men. They're never going to physically be less than 10 men at a race. But unfortunately, if your race is at the wrong time of year or in maybe a strange place, it kind of is likely that you might not have 10 women. You might have the 9 best women in the world there, but you might not have a 10th.
Yeah.
Anyway, and it happened, true as Bob. There were only 8 women on the start line. The top 4 were all fresh out of world champs, so they were all really, really good.
Yeah.
And the top 3 women got 50% of the prize money, and the men went home with 100%.
Yeah.
And you just think, like, I see what the race organizer was trying to do, but what it actually did when they stipulated that in the rules, and I know for a fact because I was personally messaging women to try and get them to come to the race,
yes,
was that the girls went, there's no way I'm going to that event because if 10 of us aren't there, we're going to get half the prize money and I can't take that risk. So I'm just not going to go at all.
Yeah.
So it totally backfired on the event.
That's crazy. The fact that you have to be messaging other people to be like, hey, come, let's go. Like, how are we going to get people to this event? Like, it shouldn't be our job.
No.
It should be the event organizer's job. And that's like actually quite sad that that's happening, that you have to encourage your competitors to go to an event so you can actually all compete against each other.
And it's crazy. Yeah, I mean, it's like it goes against, I mean, imagine having to phone like freaking fellow Olympians, please be at the race so that we can fight equally for the medal we both want. Like, it's And I also, and I've had many race organizers say to me, all right, Haley, you're being all vocal about equal prize money. You better make sure women come to my race. And I'm like, but it's not my job to get women to come to your race. You make it appealing for us.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think you raise a good point. Like, I think that idea of helping women to come to your event would actually be quite powerful. Or otherwise, maybe running like, so lately we've been trying to do things like mixed doubles events, because there are more barriers for women. They're scared. They're not as experienced. They don't know how to drive the boat through the surf zone. So we're saying, why don't you put a cool prize or a little bit of bonus prize money into the mixed double, and then you incentivize people to paddle with a female. Yeah. Then that woman learns how to paddle and learns ins and outs, and then she might come back in a couple of weeks' time in a single.
Yeah.
Or incentivize the women's doubles race so that they can buddy up and then not feel so alone and learn from each other. You know, so there's definitely ways, as you say, to try and promote women to come. Like, we run a lot of, we actually haven't run in a few months, so I must follow up on that. But we run some free women's clinics.
Okay.
Where so there's no barrier, there's no boundary. We provide the boat, we can provide the paddles, we can provide the life jackets. Just come and try out the sport.
Yes.
And that's pretty helpful as well, because then they at least get a taste of it and they're like, okay, cool, I want to do this. So yeah, like you say, there are ways to be proactive.
Yeah, I mean, we're the ones that are passionate about the drive. And I think we have to realize at the end of the day, we are going to actually be the ones driving it. And we kind of just have to take responsibility for that, I guess. It is frustrating. And sometimes you feel like, oh, this really shouldn't be our job. Like, we are the competitors.
Yes.
And there should be someone else taking responsibility for this. But I think, unfortunately, if we don't do it, I don't think anybody else will. And
it's, and that's exactly it.
Yeah, it's sad, but it's the reality.
It's how I felt like over the last couple of years, and I've had to have a few nasty sort of, not nasty, but like, it's awkward. It's awkward being the one that has to send the email. Yeah, honest, good word. You know, email the organizer or phone the organizer and be like, hi, I'd really like to come to your event, but I see it's unequal prize money. And you can just imagine them rolling their eyes.
Going, oh, not but another one.
It's exactly as you said. Oh no, Haley's calling. We know what this is. But like, I guess maybe because I'm an older athlete, I care less, I care more and I care less about what they think, if you know what I mean.
Think,
I'm
sort of like, exactly.
If I'm happy to put my neck on the line, because I don't want this to happen to the youngsters coming through. I don't want it to happen to my, you know, if I have daughters one day. And I think if you do it in a respectful way, in a transparent, honest way, and you can kind of say like, come on guys, look at what we're doing. Help us help you.
Yeah.
Then they actually all take it really, really well. Like, some of the sort of scariest race organizers have been like, absolutely, Hales. I'm so glad you brought this up. I'm so sorry we hadn't thought of this sooner. Let's make it happen. And then you're like, oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, they just actually they just went thinking about it. So some people are open to it, which is good.
Absolutely, some really are, and I think it's definitely improving. But as you say, we're gonna have to just put our necks, you know, on the chopping board a bit, and take a few hits. Yeah. But it will be worth it in the long run, I have no doubt. And certainly if we want to see these sports grow. You can see it now already, especially in surf ski, big sponsors coming on board, supporting male and female equally. And the girls are just rising up and chasing down the men. So it's been really positive to see.
Yeah, that's awesome. It almost, and for you, it must feel like, sure, actually some of this hard work and these hard conversations I've been having are actually paying off now.
Yeah.
I'm getting something out of it.
Sure.
So that's awesome.
I mean, you and I started this conversation kind of talking about, like, you know, failing at a sport. Like, whereas in this sense, like, I'm kind of like, cool. So maybe it won't really be about the medals you won, but maybe it'll be about actually changing the culture of a sport so that it's better going forward. And that's awesome. You know, that's bigger than just putting another trophy on your wall.
That's huge. It's like changing the changing it for the girls and boys that are coming up into the sport, like for the lighties, you know, it's changing it for them so that they don't have to struggle with the same things we did. And I think so we're sort of at that place now where we actually, the winning of the event or, you know, getting the gold is, you're starting to see that it's maybe, that's not what it's all about right now. Right now it's about
exactly.
making it an equal opportunity for all. and that's more important.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes it's hard because sometimes you're like, yeah, but I do just want to go and win.
Come up.
Yeah, I do just want to go and win an event. Or I do just want to run a race. But sometimes you got to bite the bullet and be like, okay, no, I'm actually going to stand up for what I believe in rather.
Yeah, for sure. And I've often said to Paul, like, I'm tired of wearing so many hats. Like, I don't want to have to recruit women to come to the race. I don't want to have to advertise someone's race for them so that other women can come and race. I don't want to have the awkward phone call with the organizer. Like, exactly as you say, I just want to train, go to my event, do my best, and come home. Yeah. But unfortunately, what I realized is if I didn't fight for it, I was just going to keep winning 1/3 of the men's prize money for the rest of my career. Yeah, and I was like, no, pass. That's not
what I'm here for.
No. The world's changed. Like, yes. And I think I honestly just started feeling so disrespected. I was like, we are getting good at what we do. We are actually really, really good. So you need to start respecting that because there are races when the men's field isn't that strong and the women's field is actually really strong. But yet the men would still be getting double the prize money, you know, and you think, oh no, this has got to change because you're actually putting women off the sport. It's been difficult, but I'm proud of what we've done. I'm proud of the changes that have happened. And I think we need to keep tapping away at this, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think we need more women like you who like are passionate about their sport and about what their goals are. And standing up for them. I mean, I don't think every sport has ambassadors like you to do that for it. So I think that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, thanks.
It's really good.
No, thanks. It's good to hear. And certainly when I can't cope with chasing the young guns onto the podium anymore, then at least I'll have something else to do.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness.
I've been like watching some other sports and, you know, like not spending all my time watching rowing videos now. But and like there are some sports, like there's a lot of running where like women are actually just faster than men sometimes, you know, and it's just like we actually like we can do this. We're not like inferior in every way on the playing field. And I think I mean, we're always going to come up against it. I think they're always going to be, and I know I even have this discussion with my friends and you know, we laugh about it or whatever. But I mean, you know, they are sports and they're like, yeah, but watching girls sport is just boring. Like, it's not as exciting as men's sports. And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know if we want to get into this conversation right now. But, you know, not what it's about. It's not what it's about.
It will develop.
Yeah.
You've got to give it that opportunity. Because everyone, let's say the merit of the woman is slightly lower than the men's, it's only a matter of time before they catch up because they'll be exponentially improving. But if you keep shunning them and you keep not giving them their exposure, you're just asking for the same result.
Exactly.
You know, now you see so much more women's football, you see so much more women's rugby. You start hearing that the Kiwi Ferns, the women's rugby team, actually won overall team of the year in New Zealand, not the men. And you think when things like that start coming out, that's because someone believed it was worth giving the woman a chance. Yeah. And look what's happened.
We've got to look at other countries and what they're doing as well. I mean, I think I actually did see that in New Zealand. And like they're doing a lot for women's sport, but they also have great ambassadors for women's sport. So I think that's also, I think they're like rowing women are doing really well. Like you say, the Kiwi Ferns, I think there's some like athletics women that are doing really well as well, and just like great ambassadors, and that's what we need. We just need women to stand up for like themselves and us as a community, and that's all we need really. We just need to be heard and our voices heard, and I think that's just like the first step in making people listen.
Yeah, and just back each other. But actually, you know, you say that, and I think one of the things that has also been quite key for me is when we've had a few influential or quite respected like male paddlers get behind us, because it's quite easy for the guys just to stick their head in the sand and go, well, this is not a male issue, so there's nothing I can do. But those of them that have come forward and gone, I totally agree, these chicks are awesome, you know, I couldn't drop them in the race, I couldn't get past them, or I completely agree, I've seen how hard they're training, when they're quite vocal about it, then we all rise.
Exactly.
And I think so it's not necessarily just the girls fighting on their own. Like, you know, we defend the men and they defend us back. And that creates a lot of camaraderie as well. Like Hank and I, we will message each other every time to say who's buying lunch tomorrow based on who gets the best percentage.
That's great.
So he knows, like, he knows I'm going to sell my soul to try and beat him on percentage. Yeah. And I know the same. So regardless, like, if we are both winning, that's cool. But there's also the, like, the intergender. And I mean, that's great because he used to mock me all the time. Oh, are you only getting, like, I don't know. There would always be a thing of, like, are you only getting one tacky because you're a female, so you actually don't deserve both, but the guys will all get both shoes, you know? But in the same breath, he's the first person to stand up and go, the girls deserve it too. Yeah. Like, this is the positive change we need. And when it comes from someone that everybody looks up to, it helps. So we also need to reach out to our male, you know, competitors and colleagues and say, come guys, get behind this. And if they're not behind it, have those awkward conversations with them. Yeah. Try and challenge them to see it from our side. Otherwise, just make sure that they have daughters.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Because, I mean, it's not their fault that this has happened.
No.
We can't blame them and we can't put them down for it. And I think you're so right. We almost just both need to get on the same page and then we, like, move forward together. It's such a better way of thinking about it. Because I think we often, like, we just, like, oh, the men always get everything and no. But, you, like, yeah, it's not actually their fault. It's just the way it's happened because of you know, women not always having as being as present in sport. But it doesn't mean that we can't get to a point where everyone's on the same page with equality.
Exactly. And they would have also worked hard to get what they've received. But possibly won't have seen some of the struggles that we've had to go through. So I think including them and educating them is more powerful and is actually quite worth it. So it's good to consider as well.
For sure. We need the men, actually.
No, we do. We all need each other. Like, let's face it. It would be boring if it was just girls out there and vice versa.
Exactly. So, we wouldn't have any men to beat. I mean, that would just be disappointing.
No, exactly. And the guys, like, it's their favorite.
I'm actually going to mention the story.
I was
going to
say, the guys are always like, don't get picked.
Yeah. Because it happens every year around this time. And I'm sorry for anyone's listening, but we're talking a little bit of rowing talk here. But Buffalo Regatta every year. It's just happened, I think, 2 weeks ago on Valentine's Day. And the one year, me and Nadine raced there in the pair. And we raced in, like, the B men's pairs because
I saw that.
Or whatever. And then we raced against men. And I think, I don't know who it was. I think it was a Wits pair beat us, but then we came second. And there's a picture of us. And I hope they are listening to this. But it's we're just ahead of Jake Green and Stuart. Oh, I can't think of your surname now. And every year,
classic.
The memory comes up on my Facebook page, and I have to, share it because I'm like, you see,
but it's,
you got beaten by a woman. It's amazing. And and everyone just loves, the whole rowing community just laughs about that picture every year. So. Yeah, it's just a bit of tongue-in-cheek, but I mean, such a great memory to have, especially if we're talking about
And it is cool when we can, when we can, like, innocently race each other and laugh about it and, oh, lunch is on you and, oh, I got chicked and, yeah, it's cool. It's kind of healthy competition, but there was an ultra trail run maybe 2 years ago, like one of those proper mountain trails, like, I don't know, 100 mile or whatever.
Yes.
And the winning trophy, it said something like overall winner male. And the overall winner, the person who won that day by something like 12 hours, was the female, and they physically didn't have a trophy to give her.
Oh my gosh.
And she took it so well, so humbly.
Yeah.
But the organizer actually came forward and he was like, times have changed. We need to change the way we look at sport and podiums and trophies because it's too gender biased. It's on the up. It's definitely on the up, but we need to keep sort of having conversations like this presenting it in the right way, but standing together.
Yeah, I think they're going to be more and more times like that when things do happen like that. And organizers and people are going to be like, oh my gosh, things have changed and I haven't even seen it happening. And that's right in front of my eyes. So
exactly.
So it's almost happening naturally in a way in some places as well. So that's great.
No, for sure. Yeah. So it's positive.
Definitely. Yeah, so sure. I think that was, we got through some some good stuff there.
Awesome.
And I think, yeah, I think just before you leave, I've got some like quick fire questions to ask you.
Yes.
Just some like fun questions. So don't like think too much about them. But
okay.
It's a cool way to for us to like learn a little bit more about you.
Okay.
So first question, what is your biggest fear?
As you said that, I looked up at this the shark on my wall here. And I was like, getting eaten by a shark in the sea?
Oh my gosh. And you spend a lot of time in the sea as well.
Yeah. Well, you said quickfire. That was the first thing that popped into my head.
What is your favorite chocolate?
Oh, Dairy Milk Whole Nuts, the biggest slab possible.
Oh, amazing. How long does it take you to get ready in the morning? I can't remember if you're a morning person or not.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm quick. I'm like Olympic, although I didn't go. No, I'm super quick. I'm a real morning person. Like this morning, we got up at 3 a.m. to get ready for the race. I went for a shower, made a coffee. Like, I love mornings.
Yeah, that's crazy. What is the one thing you have always wanted to do that maybe you haven't done yet?
Oh, the Olympics. Okay. Maybe there's still time.
Yeah,
I can go
there's
in my
always
40s.
Time. Yeah, exactly. There's plenty of being in their 40s. So
yeah, exactly. I'll try to have a child first.
Okay, I'll babysit.
Excellent.
Okay, Pick n Pay or Woolies?
Oh, Pick n Pay. Yeah. Pick and Pay.
Winning. Okay, if you were stranded on a tropical island, what two things would you want with you?
Paul and his fishing rod.
Yeah, he's actually been catches you some good dinner. Hey? That's amazing.
He's a machine. We would never die of hunger.
Oh, that's great. What have you done that you are most proud of?
I think winning the world champs in surf ski, I mean, not to go into it, but it was definitely from a sporting perspective, it was like one of the highlights of my sporting career and certainly of my life. It's just such a unique feeling to hold a gold medal from a world champs. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I can only imagine. It must be amazing. Feeling.
Yeah.
What's your favorite sport to watch?
Oh my goodness, I don't even know. I don't watch a lot of sports. It's terrible.
The Olympics.
Yeah, maybe that's probably the one thing I do. Like, I'll get DSTV just to watch the Olympics.
Yeah, I think everyone does that. They're just like, for that, I'm just gonna get
DSTV. No, exactly. Yeah.
What was the last overseas trip you went on?
6-week tour. Hong Kong, Australia, New Zealand.
Oh, crazy. But amazing. That must have been amazing.
Yeah. No, incredible. Incredible. Just and surf ski takes you to some pretty beautiful places normally. I mean, the nature of the sport means it's often like a tropical beach somewhere. It's just, it's heaven. Yeah. Yeah. It's very special.
Was that all for racing or some training? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think I had 5 or 6 races over those 6 weeks. So, you sort of... Like you're in Perth for 2 weeks, you're in Hong Kong for a week and a half, you're in New Zealand for a week, you just sort of hop and skip and train along the way.
Okay. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, it's actually sport. That's the one cool thing about competing in sport at a high level is that it takes you pretty much all over the world, which is awesome.
Absolutely. Like someone will ask me, have you been overseas before? And I'm like, yeah. Actually, I am so spoiled with how many places I've been to, like random places like Tahiti. Like who can say they've been to Tahiti?
Yeah.
I've been to Hawaii twice. Like I would never have gone to Hawaii were it not for, well, the sponsor, Sean Partner that sent me, but the surf ski race. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm incredibly lucky for that perspective.
Yeah. And I didn't realize it, but I've spoken to a few people lately, you know, like, yeah, well, not youngsters, but I mean, in their 20s and mid 20s and, you know, saying like, oh, like, where have you been overseas? And I'd be like, no, I haven't left South Africa. And, you know, by the age of 25, I'd been like almost to like 3 or 4 continents. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so spoiled. Like, I cannot believe. And you kind of like, when you're in it, you just take it for granted. You're like, oh yeah, but like, oh, we're going to Switzerland again this year for like the World Cup.
Oh, I know.
And you like, don't realize it. But now when you're talking to people about traveling and stuff, you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm so, so fortunate for what I've been, where I've been able to travel and the place I've been able to go to just for sport.
Yeah, like I've had to bite my tongue before because I'm almost moaning that I've got to go to Spain for a race, and I can just see the person looking at me like, you absolute cow. And I'm like, you're so right. Like,
yeah,
it's tough and it's training and it's business, you know, a lot more than it's pleasure. But jeepers, how many people can say that they've, you know, they've been to all those places, and I'm 36 years old. Like,
yeah,
some people will never go overseas. They won't be able to afford it, or they'll be too scared. You know, some people are just scared to go.
Yeah, and sometimes you got to take the time to like share your stories about it, because people are often like seriously interested to hear, like, oh, where have you been? Like, where did you go? And you like don't really want to talk about it. Sometimes you're like, oh, it was just like another competition or whatever, la la la. But actually, like, sometimes you need to like actually give them the time and be like, yeah, this is what I saw and this is where I went and it was really cool. And if you ever go, I recommend this or that or the next thing. And it like that, I've really like been trying to be better at that, to like. Almost so right. My experiences to other people, because I used to be so bad at it.
when I got back from Hawaii from the Molokai race in 2018, so I'd had this like fluke experience to go there, and I'd won it and I'd broken the record, and I got home, and one of the first people I bumped into was a paddler from the Lifesaving Club, and he was like, Hales, when are you gonna do a presentation evening on the Molokai? Like, it's my bucket list race, and I'm dying to hear about it.
Yeah.
And I was so embarrassed, and I was like, no, what are you talking about? I'm not doing a presentation on my race. Like, who wants to watch? And I was like, I didn't even consider it.
Yeah.
And 2 years later, I saw him the other day, and he still was like, you guys have no idea like how people like me want to have gone to Molokai, and you just take it for granted. Like, he was like, I would still come and listen to you talk about that. It is something I dream of. And it's exactly as you say, like we just take it for granted, or we don't really want to talk about it because it was, you know, it was a hectic race, or I don't know. Exactly that. I think we don't realize the experiences we're getting, and that you can do it in a nice, humble, happy way, but share it, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Promote the place and promote your sports.
Like, yeah, exactly. Promote your sports. I mean, just now, like, there's going to be, I don't know, whatever, 20 kids coming to listen to their talk, and whatever it is, in 5 years' time, half of them get there. You know, you never know what you spark, you
exactly,
like,
or it motivates them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, they watch the video and they see they see this Hawaii and they go, that's it. That's what I needed to see and I needed to hear in order to wake up and go to swimming at 5 a.m. tomorrow morning, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think we do need to do more of that, absolutely.
Yeah, just like being an ambassador for your sport and for the events that you go to and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, I also need to be much, much better at it. Last question. What is the best advice you have ever been given?
That's also quite tricky.
Yeah, it is a tricky one.
Because I mean, it can get quite deep. I mean, there's a lot on it. I think, I want to say like prepare, fail to prepare and prepare to fail. You know, there's in especially in surf ski racing, there's so many different conditions you can get in the ocean. It can be dead flat. It can be wild and upside down and on its head, which makes it really technically challenging. And I so often find people will arrive at a surf ski race and they'll be like, oh, it's flat. This isn't really a surf ski race. This sucks. I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but you knew, you like control the controllables. Maybe that's the best advice I've ever been done. Like, you knew it could have been flat today, so you could have prepared some flat water training. And it's the same as me. I rock up at a race and it's blowing 30 knots and it's 2.5 meters. And I'm like, oh, wow. But I knew. I know it could have been that big and that wild. So make sure you get out in those conditions. As I said initially, if you fail to prepare, you must be prepared to fail. But I think possibly the one of the quotes I've almost lived by is control the controllables. So assess what you can control and be good at that. And then the rest should fall into place if you've prepared for everything else, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's something I also live by when I was rowing as well. Control what you can control, because I mean everything else is left up to other people. You can't control other people, you can't control other boats, you can't control the weather, you can't you know all these things. So just focus on what you can do, and do that to the best of your ability. And I think it goes, you know, for life in general as well.
Yeah, not exactly. Just sports. No, exactly. No, yeah. So that would probably be it for now. Yeah.
Awesome.
Control the controllable.
Yeah. Sure, Hales, it's been a good catch up, I must say.
That's been awesome. Yeah, I'm glad we spoke about all the rowing and everything. I mean, yeah, it's good to like also remember that we had like really good times, and we don't have to, for a long time, I just wanted to put that all in a box and pretend it never happened. But actually now I'm like, man, it all happened for a reason. It's a journey. Like, you can't get everything right.
No. And I think like at the time it was so serious and hectic, and like, I know, yeah, it was like we had some tough times, but like the fact that we can sit now, yeah, and laugh about it's also great, because I think it just shows that it's all a learning journey, learning curve, whatever you want to call it. But
I agree.
I'm glad that you've...
No, thank you. It was awesome.
Yeah, that you've like gone on your journey after rowing and achieved all the things you've achieved, and it's been awesome to follow you and watch you. And yeah, I can't wait to see what the future holds.
If you would like to find out more about the Girls Only Project, visit our website at www.girlsonlyproject.org, or follow us at Go Project SA on Twitter or at Girls Only Project on Facebook and Instagram.